Hi there, my name's Ollie Lloyd and welcome to the Food Talk Show. On today's show, we're joined by Toby, one of the founders of All Things Butter. Toby has worked for a wide range of startups in what some might call kind of sexier categories like CBD drinks and razor blades. But today we're talking to him about the world of butter, which is his latest venture. So let me start by welcoming Toby to the Food Talk Show.
Thanks so much for having me, Ollie.
Thanks for joining. So, look, start off by just giving us a brief overview of All Things Butter, how it got started and what you're trying to do.
Yeah, so if you asked me a few years ago and whether I was going to be in the dairy business, I would have most likely laughed at you. It wasn't something that I was particularly passionate about growing up. However, I'm in business and have been in business with a chef friend of mine called Thomas Straker, who over the last couple of years from a social media perspective is renowned for butter based on a series that he created where he looked at making different flavored butters and the versatility of it as a product and as a chef. And in the kitchens, it was something that they use a huge amount. And at home, people now really use cooking oils rather than butter in their cooking. And so the idea came around a couple of years ago once a series kicked off, and we felt that within the marketplace there was an opportunity for a challenger brand to come in to really highlight the versatility of it, of butter as a product, and try and get people cooking more with it.
It's interesting because when you look at butter as a category, as you rightly say, it's kind of full of retail-owned brands and what I'll call really historical legacy brands that, as you say, haven't really done a lot. Why do you think that is?
I think that with it, butter is a difficult one from an innovation perspective. You could probably say something similar to milk in the sense that nothing's really changed for the last kind of 20 or so years. And rather than looking at innovating versus say some of the plant-based alternatives, it's almost been actually, if we can't beat them, let's join them. So Arla, who is the corporation who essentially owns majority of the butter brands, also owns a lot of the margarine spread brands, and now is launching a plant-based, say Lurpak, for instance, that they're launching a plant-based. So rather than investing into the category that I feel that has kind of made them as brands, I felt that I felt that there was almost a element of kind of giving up on the innovation side of things because of the way that trends were going and consumer trends were going, rather than really trying to support it. The reason from their side, I wish I could answer that question, but for me personally, if they had been, then I wouldn't be sat here today, which so kind of thankful for it, and hopefully that we could be the ones who try and drive a bit more innovation within the category.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because there are definitely brands that have kind of histories in categories who actually, as you rightly say, kind of almost give up on the category. And, you know, I suppose if you go back, you know, everyone thought the future was flora, the future was margarine. And actually what's interesting here is that I think you're right. I think they have kind of neglected the potential of the category. And as you also say quite rightly, you know, I think chefs also have been innovating. You know, the kind of the butter tasting plate, the idea of different breads and different butters has become a bit of a thing, hasn't it?
Yeah. And chefs have never stopped using butter. So if you go to the best restaurants in London, which are obviously not vegan, as in not the best restaurants aren't vegan, but the best restaurants which aren't vegan, their butter is the base of majority of dishes. I'm not saying all of them, but a huge, huge proportion of them, butter is the base based on the richness, the depth of flavour that it brings. And And I think in the 90s and 2000s, there was a huge kind of smear from the supermarkets around the fat content to butter, saturated fat, etc., it hurting your heart, having heart attacks if you're going to be eating too much butter. And to be honest, if you asked me 20 years ago whether I felt that this would work as a brand, I would have said no. But I think that as people have become more educated into butter as an ingredient, people eating more whole foods, understanding that in balanced diets, having good fats, good natural fats has got health benefits to it. I feel that there has been a trick missed over the last couple of years or so from some of the larger brands to really kind of double down on the products that they've got within their lines rather than still kind of pivoting to what they believe was currently on trend.
But okay, so beyond being a kind of a champion of the category, which, you know, you're doing a good job there of selling, I suppose, the benefits of butter, what is it that All Things Butter are trying to do differently?
Yeah, so if we put it into two different areas, so one which is the stereotypical what's on the shelf, so your unsalted and your salted butter. As I said previously, there is one large corporation that owns most of the brands on shelf and also makes most of the supermarket own labels. And if you see the process that goes through, that butter will go through within the factories, it's essentially a giant machine where cream goes in one end and butter is kind of spat out the other end within a kind of a 4-hour window. Where if you look at the more traditional ways that butter was made, it was usually twice churned, it was gone through a process which was significantly longer, which allows there to be more structure within the butter and also for the butter to have a lot more of a creamier creamier taste to it. And so if you see a lot of the small batch butters and you did a kind of a taste test against a Lurpak versus the one you'd find in a farm shop, there is significant difference from a taste perspective. However, we felt that within the mass market, there was lots of great brands within the kind of the farm shop world. However, within mass market, people weren't being given an option of being able to have butter made more traditionally, hand salted with better texture. And so that's really where we live within the kind of salted and unsalted space. But for us, that's kind of one side. But our flavors is something which is a really point of differentiation. And we've started with a chili and a garlic and herb. And the main reason why we've gone down that route, nothing like they're staple flavors that people know of, is that we don't want people to be intimidated by having some too fancy ingredients within it of how to use it within their cooking. And so for us, this is kind of the entry level of getting people to start cooking more with butter. So a chili could just be basting a piece of fish that you've got rather than cooking it in oil. Or the chili could be with a chicken, with some sweet potato, whatever you'd be wanted to have it with. And we really want to be encouraging people to not only use our flavoured butters, but use our base butters, so like our unsalted butter in particular, to really make their own flavours and to be a bit more experiment a little bit more. And so that's kind of the two sides of it, of how we try and differentiate ourselves as a brand.
Interesting. I mean, I suppose one of the things I'm quite interested in is what sort of consumer moment you think you're targeting. So, you know, I've bought your flavoured butter from Ocado and was actually last night made a steak, hadn't made a steak for a long time, and absolutely chucked a large chunk of butter in to give it that kind of really special flavour. And I've said it did taste absolutely phenomenal. But I suppose butter is used in lots of different processes. Do you feel there's a particular kind of target consumer you're going after and particular kind of consumer moment that you're targeting above others?
Yeah, so I think there's, like you say, there's multiple areas. Like, if we look at this from, like, there's probably four or five different areas, different moments that we're trying to hit, but we really try and hone in on kind of hosting or cooking, trying to elevate your everyday dish at home. And so for us, in particular since COVID, we've seen, and the trend has stayed there, obviously it's dropped off a little bit since people can go out now for dinner and lunch, but rather than being locked away at home. there's been a massive increase in people really trying to elevate their own cooking from COVID time, and also from hosting, to really try and kind of create a dish that is someone feels memorable from being around your house or just having it yourself. So that's really the moment that we are trying to target. And from our videos that we do across social media, try and kind of emulate that. So it's simple dishes cooked with our butter that just take it to that next level. So that area, and we feel that that can cater to kids at uni or an older generation who are just looking at just cooking at home rather than kind of cooking for friends like it would be at university. So we feel like it's very broad moment, but really trying to hit that at home cooking to make themselves feel like they're cooking something a little bit special.
Because it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, I was looking at your pricing, and I remember the first time I bought, I think you first got the Ocado listing, and I saw the news about it, and I received the kind of the flavoured butter, which is, I would say, kind of ambitiously small, right? Versus kind of the other thing. You know, it arrives, you kind of go, ooh, okay, that's a different size. But then I was looking at your core butter, and, you know, you are charging a kind of 30% premium versus the likes of Yo Valley, and kind of, you know, 65% premium versus the likes of, you know, M&S core range. I mean, I suppose you've got to be targeting quite a foodie audience here, haven't you?
Yeah, 100%. And one of the things that we're definitely up against is the shrinkflation within butter. So your maths and your percentages are correct. But if you look at us from and you actually put it 250 grams to 250 grams, we're like somewhere around 10% more expensive than Yo Valley. However, Yo Valley is also owned by Arla. And so every single person within the Arla product range went from 250 to 200 grams. And it is quite hard to tell the differentiation, in particular online, because it's quite small that you see one's 250, one's 200. So yeah, I suppose it's still valid, your point, from a foodie perspective. And yeah, we're certainly targeting people who are looking at organic produce, looking at products with provenance from a making perspective. And so yeah, can't deny that. To be honest, for us, like, price is really, really important to us to try and make it as accessible to as many people as possible. As this is really, although we are at a price premium, we hope that with scale, with more listings, then we can try and bring it down as much as possible. As for us, it is really about, this business is around education of getting people to have the best possible product in their hands, regardless of social demographic or whether they see themselves as foodies or not. And so hopefully you'll see us under the £3 mark relatively soon. But it's a real high volume, low margin business.
and it's super difficult. Like, when you're going up against Arla, who, as you rightly say, are not, you know, they may not, you know, Yo Valley is obviously as a milk business, as my understanding is still an independent business. But the point you're making is that actually the butter is being produced by one producer, and the economies of scale they have is enormous. So tell me a bit about your supply chain, where you're making it, where you're sourcing the stuff from, and how that is different to the Arla model.
Yeah, so Thomas and I, when we first started the business about just over 12 months ago, so this was kind of January, February 2013, we kind of went searching farms up and down the country to find who we thought made the best organic butter in the country, and did it in a way that Tom's background is as a chef, but prior to that lived on a small holding, is very passionate about eating the best food, the best quality ingredients from the UK. It's all about seasonal ingredients, etc. And we, on our travels to the West Country at this point, we stumbled across a farm called Brew Valley, who within the farming community are very, very well known. Their family have been farming the land for about 500 years, and they've been making butter for around about 100 years or so. And their process, that what they did, they bought around 50 years or 50, I think it was about 60 years ago, they bought some very old French butter barrels, which they brought over back into the UK, into their site, which are just amazing looking things, and then started producing artisan butter in 1959. And so when we tried their product and we looked at their process, and so they did these guys twice churn it, hand salt it. It's quite a manual job. And with our flavours, for instance, like you say, the reason why, like, and I completely agree with you, by the way, is small. It's a 125 versus the 250. But when you think about the process of what we go to make a flavoured butter, it's essentially, obviously, it's half the amount of butter that you're getting, but there is a lot of manual labour then that goes in there, where we hand weigh all of the ingredients to ensure that it's the texture is exactly right, to ensure the consistency is exactly right, and then the ingredients themselves. And so it actually is a business, and I probably get told off for saying this, but I'll say it anyway, is that it's more expensive for us to produce a flavoured butter at 125 than it is actually a 250 gram normal butter, based on the additional process that comes in. And Brew Valley are kind of experts in making flavoured butter. So they also make butter for the likes of Daylesford, M&S speciality range. They make butter for. So got a great reputation. And we just hit it off immediately with the Clapp family. And they really believed in what we were doing and felt that there needed to be a more modern approach taken to the category that has been essentially in decline for the last kind of 20 or so years from a volume perspective.
Interesting. One of the brands I do consultancy for is Kilner, and one of the things they made about a year and a half ago was a butter maker that you make at home, that you actually literally hand churn the butter yourself, and you do kind of, it is a kind of an act of magic, right, that you turn essentially a dairy liquid into this kind of solid process. And I actually think there is something, I think when you've done something yourself, you do appreciate some of the art form that can kind of go into it. And the way you describe that is really interesting, because look, I think you're right, so many of these processes are mechanized, and look, it's great that, you know, I suppose you're through your business, you are supporting, you know, a smaller farm, and that will be driving, you know, employment and, you know, support into the local community.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, for us, and in particular, when I was talking about the business idea with Tom was very passionate from his background that we were going to be working really closely with local communities and trying to source the best produce from the best makers. And on top of that, when Tom was talking about it, I really saw his passion. And when I was at Harry's, I thought one of the things that I really enjoyed about working there was their link to men's mental health. And that was something that they really wanted to support from day one. So they actually did, rather than go down the B Corp route and all the 1%, which is owned by the person who started Patagonia, they actually just did a revenue pledge. So Harry's from day one pledged 1% of their total revenue. So no profits, nothing like that. It was just total top line revenue to men's mental health organisations. And I felt there was a massive authenticity about that, around the fact that the brand could then really talk about something passionately and also could back it up from what they were actually trying to do to support. And so for us, we did the same from day one. So we actually donate 1%. So on top of working with the great farms that we have on board, we actually donate 1% of our total revenue to the RABI, which is the Royal Agricultural Benevolent Institute, who are one of the biggest farming charities in the UK. And across the year, we'll be supporting them with supporting them on a lot of the initiatives that they'll be doing, which we're just really excited about and feel that it works particularly well with what we're trying to do as a brand as well.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because look, I think, you know, farmers are having a particularly tough time at the moment, and obviously the weather over the last few months has been you know, not exactly in their favour. And I mean, one has to assume, based upon all the direction that climate change is going in, it's not going to get any easier. So I think it's rare, actually, in the challenger brand world that I hear people talk about their close relationship with farmers.
Well, yeah, exactly. And also, most challenger brands are usually going, or a significant proportion of challenger brands are actually going against the farmers in products that they're trying to do. I get it occasionally on LinkedIn from challenger brands of being asking me why I'm looking to create a challenger brand within a space that they deem as being old fashioned and something that they don't feel that is good for animal welfare and we should be looking at more progressive things like plant-based alternatives, etc. Where my view personally is that farming and dairy has been around for 10,000 years or more than 10,000 years. And so I feel that we have a duty for ourselves, the business, to ensure that from an animal welfare perspective, from ensuring that we work with the best farms, with the best methods, et cetera, and provide providence for that. But I don't feel that dairy, that should just mean that old categories should just be going out of business. I feel that we can do a better job of what's been done before, and something that as a business we're super passionate about.
Look, I think that's right, which is ultimately these are huge categories, right? And whatever, you know, may change in the food environment, being able to make a significant impact and improve the way that a large legacy category is being looked at can only deliver, you know, positives, right? I do have a lot of sympathy for your view on that. So, I mean, I'm interested because I do look at your CV and, you know, you've done the likes of Trip and Harry's. And I mean, what are the big lessons you're bringing from those brands into this kind of legacy category? Because I wonder, I suppose Harry's actually was also in a legacy category.
Yeah, I mean, I actually think there's lots of similarities to Harry's and to all things butter, from the dairy category to the razors category, considering it's so different. But there are lots of similarities in the sense of pretty much owned by one big CPG corp, which is P&G, who essentially own most of the brands. And Harry's wanted to come in there and do things better. And their view of doing things better was by making a fairer price for blades, because Gillette had essentially monopolized the blade market from either white labeling blades to lots of other brands, but also the blades themselves. And any guy who shaves will know that men's razor blades are extortionately expensive. And there was this kind of like big David and Goliath story, which I feel that there is similarities to what we're trying to do, where massive corporation, which essentially has monopolized the dairy market, we've come in and we're really trying to put a different view on how people should be looking at the dairy category, trying to have a bit of fun with it from a branding perspective, and really pushing it from a social media angle, which for us and for our competitors, we're essentially in a little bit of white space when it comes to social media. So if you look at any of the other dairy brands, you can essentially add up all of the social media followings for the likes of Lurpak, Yo Valley, Anchor, Country Life, etc. And we actually have more followers already, and we've been going around about 4 months. We have more followers than all of them combined. And so it's not a place that they have overinvested in at all. And for us, we feel that is the perfect space for us to really try and drive this message of education and of trying to get people to cook more with butter. And we think it's the great space to do that.
It's interesting. You mentioned the social media thing. Obviously, you know, the business is, you know, so Genesis comes from social media. But how have you found the transition from moving from being a kind of a social media cult, I'll call it, to actually driving retail sales?
Yeah. Actually, if I think as well, I didn't particularly answer your... I spoke very much on Harry's on the first question, so I can kind of amalgamate a little bit more from your initial question as well. So let me carry on actually from the previous question on some of the other brands. I feel that if, because I've worked also for like patch plants, for instance, which was a perfect space to really try and a perfect place to really try and disrupt the way that people were trying to buy plants, which was essentially just from in garden centres to then buying them online. And COVID was like the perfect place to start that. And then some other brands that I've consulted for. But if I take that, if I take Trip, for instance, CBD is something that, from an education perspective, if you asked my mum kind of 18 months ago or maybe a little bit longer, she would associate it with just getting high and marijuana and then actually not having any kind of health benefits to it, but also the realization that you can drink 10 cans of it and you can drive and you're absolutely fine. And it doesn't make you high like THC does from kind of smoking marijuana. And so again, like if I take that brand, a lot of it was from a social perspective, it was all around education. So although we're educating on a different thing, there's a huge amount of learnings that we can take from how we educated, even though it was CBD, to how we can educate through people wanting to cook more with butter. And from a brand point of view, in particular with Trip, where there was a huge fixation on kind of touch, feel, the way it looked like looked on shelf, the way that they did their SRPs, the way that they marketed themselves online, which I've essentially, that essentially gave me the confidence from, I was the head of growth there, to actually do the butter business. I felt that if we could do this with CBD, with a category that has a kind of a bit of a stain on it in from a couple of years ago to where it is now, I feel that I can do this with butter from, although it's a different proposition of, there's lots of legacy brands out there and we have to really come in here and make a bit of noise and speak to retailers and try and get incremental people into the category. That Trip, kind of from a brand perspective and putting themselves out from an education point of view, was really inspiring for us. And a lot of what we did there, I've really kind of brought from a strategic perspective into how we are, how we've launched the brand so far. And kind of over the next 12 months, there'll be lots of different activations, some PR pieces, new flavors. Social will always continue doing 3 or 4 different videos a week, always building on the momentum that we've already done. And in store, more, we have more retail launches coming up in the next, well, we've got one next week actually, and then we have another coming in a few months, then another few months after that, and in talks with a few others. And so I feel like we need to, like one of Trip's strategic moves was really trying to get into as many retailers as possible to show people that when we're in store, it immediately, it almost gives people confidence to purchase rather than just seeing it online. Because you see it on a shelf, and therefore if it's in a shelf of a supermarket, in a supermarket that you trust, then you go, okay, maybe I'll try that. Where if it's online, you're maybe more hesitant based on the fact that anyone can sell anything online. And so for us, again, we feel similarly with butter is that we wanted to, like we've really pushed the retail channel rather than the online channel. To give people more confidence, in particular with our flavoured butters, to go, okay, well, Sainsbury's have now got it on the shelves. Like, they've obviously gone through the, like, I think the subconscious mind gives it more trust to go, okay, I will try that, rather than seeing it online.
Interesting. And you found that the retailers have, because look, at times retailers can be very old school and can kind of, you know, slightly look down on, you know, social media trends and not necessarily get on these things as fast as they need to. It feels like in your case, they've kind of jumped at the opportunity, you know, more than they have in other cases. So you're getting good feedback from the retailers so far?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like there's a really strong narrative in particular because the category has stagnated, if not declined, pretty much year on year. And it's always a large space within the store that is very rare, I think, within the butter and spreadables buyer. They see a product that has opportunity to bring in incremental people into the category rather than it just being like, rather than slightly salted, it's a little bit more salted or extra salted or slightly lower fat. I mean, that's essentially the innovation that's happened over the last 20 years. There hasn't really been any, I mean, the margarine alternatives was the kind of lower fat side of things, but apart from that, nothing's really happened. And so from there and building the narrative on the fact that from social media following, and Tom, obviously, my co-founder, having 5 million social media followers, there's just been a general excitement around the brand and what we think it can do on shelf. And also just the look of it on shelf, getting people to catch people's eye, regardless of whether they buy our butter or not. I think that it'll be a surprise to most consumer who would just walk past the butter and spreadables aisle with it being looking the same. And it hasn't, I mean, literally has very, very little change at all from a brand perspective, from a brand colour, from a brand update, where it looks very similar. So, yeah, we've been fortunate that we launched the brand into Ocado. So that was our first retailer. And then we've just launched in Sainsbury's about 2 weeks ago. We launch in Asda next week on Tuesday. And we have another couple of big nationals coming on within the next kind of 3 or 4 months. We've been really fortunate that so far feedback has been very strong, but we also know that there's definitely bumps in the road to come, especially in particular from a flavours perspective. So the garlic and herb and chilli is essentially, we've made it because Thomas and I thought that that was a good entry level product to come in. However, if we look at the consumer data perspective, it's very clear to see that garlic and herb is absolutely flying, and chilli's doing well, but the garlic and herb is absolutely flying. And so I think that when we bring in a few more flavours into the range, be really interested to see how the consumer responds to kind of maybe slightly quirkier flavours or maybe truffle butter's one that we're really, really keen on doing, and a few others like that. And so, yeah, really excited to see how they land in the future.
Interesting. And tell me, I mean, what do you feel is working on social media then? Because look, I think lots of brands, you know, both challenger and established, attempt to kind of, you know, really create a community on social media. Obviously, you're very lucky with your co-founder being kind of, you know, a real influencer in this space. But as a brand, what do you feel is working on social?
Yeah, I actually, if you look at, I always use an example. If you look at Red Bull, which is obviously one of the biggest, in particularly, like, they're humongous on social media, very, very good at social media. Red Bull on their feed will have zero pack shots. It won't be stylized shoots of people drinking Red Bull. They're always trying to do things or create content that they can have an association with Red Bull, and they can put it into their content in a subtle, authentic way. And for me, that's how we look at social media. This is, our social media will not have just like stylized photo shoots of kind of a dinner table where there's just a block of butter, which is conveniently wrapped rather than unwrapped, because there's no point in us having, just a block of butter, which has got no branding on it at all on a table, because we want people to see the brand. And so for us, instead, it's, okay, well, the obvious way for us to go about it is to really invest in cooking content and show people with a full range of what you can cook with it, and it's not an in-your-face kind of a product placement kind of shoot. It's a genuinely authentic piece of content that we have around kind of 7 or 8 creators now, where Tom is a chef, but most of our creators are just at home cooks. So it can it allows people to look at the product, see great recipes being made by people who they would say that they are at a similar level of cooking, and inspire them to actually use the product. So our social strategy is very much aligned to user-generated content of people using our product in an authentic way, rather than it being a kind of a beautifully curated tile that looks aesthetically very good from the outset, and perhaps it would look pretty on a deck. However, for us, it's actually just about creating content that we think that people would want to see on their feed and authentically using our product.
But when you say consumer generated content, you do mean paid influencer content though, right?
No, so we have a mixture. So Tom is obviously a co-founder, and we're bringing on two other people who are, have equity within the business, who are large influencers in the food space. So they'll be owners of the company as well. So we work, their payment will essentially come from that they are now owners of the business. And then everyone else we use at this moment of time, we give product to them and they just like making recipes online. And so essentially our content that we have, bar the post is packaging and sending out butter. And sometimes we don't even need to do that because they've already bought our product and they just want us, they want to build their, I don't know whether it's their viewership or anything along those lines. We don't actually do paid influencer content. It's most likely something we're going to have to do in the future. But right now it's mainly the people who make our food have got say 500 or 600 followers who are looking to build a audience, and for us we have a platform that they can use it from, and they have creativity to make it, and then if they send over their clips then we'll edit it for them for free, we'll send them the butter. Oh, and then we, I suppose the only other thing we pay for, we pay for all their ingredients.
Interesting. I mean, it's such an inspiring story, I think, of, you know, you do see kind of, you know, influencers try and create brands, but I think it's rare. I can't think of another example where an influencer has created a brand that's so connected to farms and connected to what I'd call quite a traditional product that they're actually reinventing, which I think is kind of really, you know, really inspiring, because as you rightly said at the beginning, often people are sort of leaning into, you know, the more kind of, I suppose, trendy, you know, some might say Frankenstein type foods, which actually are less, I think, helpful in some ways.
100%. And also, like, you have kind of most influencers online who kind of deem themselves fashionable, whether you agree with that or not. They would have a clothing brand, or they'd be associated with a clothing brand. But essentially, bar a very select few, who maybe have trained to be a personal stylist or whatever that is, they would just make a clothing brand on the back because they think that that is something that they are interested in. Or like the obvious one would be like Prime, the energy drink with the two gamers, where Tom is kind of worked in Michelin kitchens, has been a professional chef for 15 years, has a restaurant in Notting Hill that has had amazing reviews from the likes of William Sitwell, et cetera, et cetera. And so we feel that there is not just an authenticity from his background, from farming, from the traditional side of what we're actually doing, but also just general authenticity with butter as a product and him as a chef who uses the product every day. And I still think there's not many of that either. There's not many brands like that either.
No. And look, you know, I mean, as you know, I founded Great British Chefs on the basis that I believed that the people who knew the most about food were chefs. And too often we heard from people who didn't know a lot about food. And I think it's a really inspiring example of where a chef has found a way to turn his expertise to a category that's been neglected and hopefully build a really, really successful business. One last question, because I was sort of intrigued by it when I came across it. Your funding journey to date. You've obviously secured funding from, I'm going to call them non-traditional places. Say more about what you've been doing on funding.
We had some amazing investors come in and very randomly, I met some well now friends who are within the Hollywood world. So two producers, one who produced Barbie called Tom Ackley, and the other one is called Josie McNamara, who's just recently produced Saltburn. And I was telling them about the idea that we had, and they just completely fell in love with the concept of it. And so those two, along with a couple of other angels that we had, came in and funded the initial pre-seed round. And so it was something that was very unexpected, but just to see their passion on what they felt that we were doing, and from their side of being within Hollywood and understanding the impact that influential people can have. And if, like, I mean, the most simple influencer kind of world is putting a very high, very well-known actor into a film. Essentially, their influence will get people's attention, and then If the film's great, then brilliant, and people will watch it, and word of mouth will come. And for us, it's the same. It's like we have Tom, who will hopefully spread some great word. But essentially, if the product's rubbish, then people aren't going to repurchase it. People aren't going to talk about it. And essentially, and people may actually talk badly about it, and then it goes the wrong way that you don't want it to happen. And so, yeah, they were, they've been great partners so far, and we're actually just in the process of finalising a seed round where they have followed on again, and we've got a few other really exciting people on the table that would help us continue rolling out retail. And as you can imagine, we have to, it's a lot of volume to get through, and so we need to just raise a little bit more money to get a couple of these new ones, a couple of these new launches over the line.
Amazing. Well, listen, thank you so much today for joining. I mean, I think you're on an amazing journey, and I think, you know, actually most importantly, you're producing an amazing product and shaking up a category that for too long has been neglected. And I look forward to trying all the new flavours as they come out. So thank you, Toby, for joining us.
Fantastic. Thanks so much, Ollie. Cheers.
You've been listening to Ollie Lloyd on The Food Talk Show. Please do hit subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts and follow us on LinkedIn. Thanks for listening.